I'm doing very badly here. but anyway, I'm Esti Dinur, and I will be talking to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to WORT Madison.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got a year.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Oh, are we doing the show?
Yeah, we're gonna do it one more time here.
I'm almost done with this crossword puzzle, Mel. I don't know if I can interrupt myself enough to do that. Gotta have my priorities straight here.
We could come back later.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. You just do it, and I'll get back to you later.
Just play some.
So here was the one I thought many superheroes have them.
Capes.
Yeah, I thought capes, but it's many, many letters. And it's and I thought, well, secret identities, but that doesn't fit. It's origin stories. Origin stories.
Okay,
I thought they all did actually. I mean, they how they got to be super.
There's probably like exceptions where some are.
Yeah, there's probably just sort of showed up and. Yeah. Where are you from? None of your beeswax.
I'm from. I don't violate any copyright.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm really strong and I fly. And,
yeah, and that's all you need to know.
I have Z-ray vision.
Yeah. Well, that was Captain Marvel, right? Back in the day, the famous Captain Marvel.
Oh, totally.
From the 40s. Yeah, it was a ripoff.
But
DC sued them and they were in like court for years.
Yeah, but he was more goofy, though. I mean,
yeah, he was.
And like talking tigers and stuff.
Yeah, it was the funny version. There was an insect that was a villain. It was a worm, actually.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it was a captain. It was like a
Mr. Mighty or something.
It was a professor, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It was
Professor Worm or something.
It's a bookworm. He's a bookworm.
Yeah, oh, was that it?
Yeah. Well, now that we've driven away half the audience, let's see if we can do the other half.
So last week I went to Milwaukee and saw my favorite performer, Graham Parker.
Okay.
At Shank Hall, which is a nice place. And as I was leaving, I heard somebody yell, Floyd, Floyd.
Yeah.
And I looked around. Floyd, it was just me. Floyd wasn't with us. But yeah. I looked around. There was a woman who listens to the show.
Yeah.
And she said, so we chatted a little bit. And,
yeah.
And I think Sue was her name. I forget her name. She was a Rhinelander. I remember that.
Okay.
She said she did 18 hard years in Rhinelander. Hard time in Rhinelander.
So obviously she got parole, right? It's lovely up there. We kid because we love.
It doesn't really smell.
It doesn't, not at all.
You get used to it.
You get used to it.
But she was very nice. But she said, I heard the show today and I heard you were going. And I thought I should check it out. So I sold it.
Wow.
I'm an influencer.
You are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The influence of one.
It starts small.
It's one to one. Yeah. You got to start somewhere.
Start small. Retail.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had that effect I was telling you last week.
It was fun. It was fun. Milwaukee was nice. It was I haven't been there a lot. It was a nice, really nice part of town. Lots of it's right by the museum, the big museum and stuff, and a lot of old kind of cool buildings, the kind where they have like statues of lions out front.
Oh yeah, you love those.
Yeah, and I stayed at the Knickerbocker, which is a couple blocks away from Shank Hall, and they have a couple of lions out front, so you know it's a good place.
Yeah, yeah. So, how many lions was it, Mel?
It was a two lion hotel.
All right, excellent, excellent.
But no, it's very nice old school, type downtown hotel, you know, yeah, with real keys, you know. None
yeah.
of those,
oh, I love the real keys.
And the only problem is I was right by the elevator, which sounded like a Harley Davidson. it was Milwaukee, so it might have been a Harley Davidson powering it.
right. So exactly.
And the best part that I forgot about this is fun going to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You get to see the Foxconn office.
Oh, yeah.
It's right down there.
Was it just like a phone sitting on the middle of a carpet in an empty room or what?
Cardboard box with spray paint. Foxconn in the slot to put money in. Yeah. Taxpayers, put money here.
Yeah, right here. That's exactly it. So how was the actual concert itself?
Oh, it was fun. It was really fun. There was, you know, it's not a big place. It calls itself Shank Hall, but it's really just a bar.
Yeah.
But they set up a bunch of tables, and it was a fun show. I shared a table with some guy from Boston who was very nice and very enthusiastic. At one point, Parker played this song, Discovering Japan, and this guy just got all excited. He tapped me on the shoulder. That's my favorite song. I can't believe he's playing. This guy was like 71 years old. And he was, you know, but I get it. It was fun. Yeah, you know, you get to act like a teeny bopper. You know, like, oh, that's my favorite song.
Sounds like a Muppet, actually. You sure it wasn't a Muppet?
No, that was me.
That was you. Okay. Well, it's funny because when I told Companion last week that you were going to be going to Milwaukee to see this musical, you know, star of yours, he said, well, is he going by himself? And I said, yeah, I think he's going to, but don't worry about him. He'll make friends.
I make friends wherever
you
I
do.
Go.
I know. It's amazing. So I was like, it'll be no problem for him.
Well, this guy, as I said, is from Boston, and Boston was like a real hotbed of music back in like in the time Graham Parker came up.
Yeah,
in in the late 70s, early 80s. So we had a lot to talk about. He was a nice guy.
Oh, very good. So. Excellent. Excellent.
So, anyway, it was great fun.
So are you energized now?
Yeah.
Raring to go?
I am. I wanted to, you know, I want to go do stuff now.
Yeah.
Get off my sofa and go places. And
wow, that is pretty monumental.
That'll wear off.
Yeah, let me think about that for a minute. So I assume that you have a news blackout on watching the trial of the century, as 89 million people have said.
Oh my God. The only thing, I don't want to talk about it a lot.
No, I don't either. I just
want to comment on two things. I love that he's complaining about how cold it is.
That old good Joe Biden. I mean, I've never heard Joe Biden complain about the cold.
and not that's just that it's cold in there, but he takes it personally.
Oh, no.
It's like, they're doing this to me.
This violates the Geneva Convention in his mind.
They're doing this to make me uncomfortable.
He's calling Amnesty International
uncomfortable.
Up.
Uncomfortable. Yeah, I have to sit there. And the Fox News people are funnier than hell. They're like, of course, they have to take his side on everything.
Yeah,
like, well, this is horrible. This guy's used to being so active and being out, and he's got to sit there all day.
Yeah, you can just look at him and see that.
This is the guy who rides his golf cart up onto the green. Yeah, he does.
I know. I'm well aware. I don't think we want to see those graves in Normandy because that involves me walking. You know?
It's misting out
it's
there.
Misting
my hair.
Yeah, my souffle will fall on my head. Yeah.
And the other thing I like is that somebody will print out like stuff off the internet for him, news articles or commentary. Yeah. And then he gets this stack of papers, and then he goes out and talks to the reporters and waves this stack of papers around. Like, I mean, can you
like
be...
Like Mike Lindell or something.
Yeah, I mean, he can...
It's all right here, folks.
Printing stuff out from the internet. Just, I mean, that just cracks me up.
I mean, Joe McCarthy did that, and nobody believed him.
Yeah.
Well, no, wait, they all did. I think it's really bitterly ironic. People have been creating these parallels, but it really, seriously, if you go back 50 years, we're right at the stage in the Nixon impeachment process where the Judiciary Committee of the House of Representatives has been formed to consider articles of impeachment and have requested of the President of the United States if he could provide the tapes of that he was making in his office, especially the tapes around certain salient dates where decisions might have been made and information that could involve some kind of collusion or subornation of perjury or something like that would have taken place. And of course, he's in a situation where he's saying no. But of course, what ends up happening eventually is they take it to the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court of the United States, kiddie-witties, in 1974 was willing to actually do its job and say unanimously, including people that Nixon had put into those jobs, Yeah, you got to turn over these tapes. It's material evidence in a criminal case. Speed forward 50 years, half a century later, and we have a Supreme Court that is so basically enslaved to this, you know, this giant Mussolini wannabe that that they're like, yeah, well, maybe he has the right to kill people if he feels it, you know. I mean, we don't want to hamstring a president, you know, who might be, his enemies might come after him after office. I mean, they're supposedly originalists. Like, look at what the founders said about this. They're very clear. It's like, no, he's criminally liable. He's not the king.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's what it boils down to. It's a president. It's like a CEO. I mean, you don't make the CEO of ExxonMobil immune from any kind of prosecution. Yeah. And that person's a lot more powerful than the president of the United States.
Yeah, if you want to, I mean, a good way of thinking about this, I was thinking about this when I was reading about the trial. You know, in the state of New York, so in Canada, for example, which, you know, has the British monarch as their, technically as their monarch, legal cases are brought in on behalf of the king, you know, Rex versus blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that's the legal personality of the state.
I didn't vote for him.
When New York sues Donald Trump, it says the people of the state of New York.
Right.
It's that they're the sovereign.
Yeah.
This guy's just got a job. You know, that's all it is. The sovereign said, I want you to do this work for me.
Yeah.
And that's it. End of case. You know, and again, the people that had to deal with actual kings and knew what it meant back in the day said, yeah, of course he's criminally liable if he did something wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. It's like everybody's like, these crazy Supreme Court justices are like, well, what if this happened? Or what if that happened? Or what if this happened? How many other presidents are we going to elect that are as egregious train wreck as this guy? I mean, they had to have like grand jury say, yeah, there's enough evidence there to actually do this.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like it came out of the blue or some kind of persecution.
Right.
So in a way, what they're doing is admitting the way he sees it.
Yeah.
They're exhibiting by the way they're perceiving the case that they're in the bag with his picture of what's happening.
Yeah, that they're even discussing this in this detail at this level. It's like, well, what if aliens showed up and he needed, you know?
Yeah. It's just like... It's not a persecution. You know, I mean, you know.
I mean, Bigfoot could break into the Oval Office and he'd have to shoot him. And, you know, would that be murder? <You know?
laughs> Yeah, let's talk about some really relevant analogies here.
Well, then expanding the definition of what's an official act.
Yeah.
Especially when some of these things they're talking about, these specific things we're talking about, were done well before Trump was in the White House.
Right. I mean, the most obvious is the case he's involved in. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. I do have to, you know, I do understand why he's complaining about the cold, though.
Yeah.
Because you do not want excessive cold around the pecker. Because then you get into the shrinkage, you know.
Jesus.
New York Daily News. I don't want to get too far afield on this, because it's been done. But New York Daily News had a headline the other day that said, "Pecker in a vice."
That is pretty good. Yipes!
Of course, it was like an 84-point type, you know, on the front page.
It is an unfortunate name. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day. Oh, I can't remember who it was now, but a friend of mine was saying that he was talking to some folks from another country, and they were saying, "Why do you name some of your boys after a body part?" And he was like, "What are you talking about?" It's like, why do they name children Dick? You know, that was what he was saying. It's, well, it has more than one meaning. Yeah. You know, it's
nobody goes by Dick anymore, though, except older people.
But yeah, it's just kind of like, all right.
So anyway, do you enjoy the George Wallace button?
Oh yes, thank you so much.
My lovely neighbor Steve Potter gave me a couple of those, I brought one in for you.
So let me describe it to the folks at home. So it is a Wallace for President button. You said from the 68 campaign, right?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things which were very popular in the 60s. I've seen others where you can move it back and forth, and depending on what angle you look at it, it says different things or exhibits different things. So it says Stand Up for America, which seems, you know, kind of brutally ironic considering what happened to poor Wallace. But then it says Wallace for President. So
it's a 70s version of a hologram.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of a hologram. But I had a relative, Fred Horn. He was the biggest mouthed, obnoxious, you know, most likely to become a used car salesman. He always wore checkered suits and badly fitted wigs.
Muskrat on his head.
Yeah, muskrat on his head. And he was interviewed back in the day as a Wallace supporter on the local television station in Columbus, Ohio, and everybody in my family was so mortified. They were like, of course, Fred would like Wallace. And of course, he'd be on television braying his opinions to the local reporters. We hid our heads in shame. Hey, another Madison landmark is going away. I'm a little sad by this. Yeah, Nick's Restaurant has been in business for 65 years.
Wow.
One of the oldest restaurants in Madison, and a place that I've enjoyed going to year in and year out.
Oh, yeah. Love
and,
Nick's.
The Dino Crist, who's owned the bar and diner with his brother Tom since 1996, has said that they've been taking care of the place for a while now, but it's time to move on. And apparently they actually own that spot, which is really nice, I guess, for them. Any property that you have on State Street, you're doing pretty well. But yeah, it's time to move on. And he says that in an interview with our friend Samara Kalk Derby, who's Byline is associated with the story. This is from the Wisconsin State Journal. She said that that they will be closing on May 11th. So, yep. They opened the restaurant in 1959. Nick and Serena Christakos.
Wow.
And it's a very neat place. I just love going in there. It is a little bit like going back in time.
It really is.
But they're always very friendly, and go in there often enough, you become a regular, and you know, it's kind of fun. But the pandemic really kind of did a number on them, and it's hard to get people back after
a lot of restaurants.
Yeah.
The world has become a much safer place to be a young child in the last 50 years.
Oh, good.
I'm trying to do a little happy news here for a change.
Okay.
Since 1974, infant mortality worldwide has plummeted. That year in 1974, 1 in 10 newborns died before reaching their first birthday. By 2021, that rate had fallen by over two-thirds. There were a lot of factors that drove this change. Lower poverty, better nutrition, cleaner air and water, and readily available antibiotics and other treatments. But one of the biggest contributors, of course, was vaccines. Vaccines alone accounted for 40% of the decline in infant mortality. The estimates of this new study that in the 50 years since 1974, vaccines prevented 154 million deaths.
Somebody should tell that Robert Kennedy guy. He might like to know that. Just saying.
Or they should interview him to get the other side of the story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The pro-serial killer point of view.
There, one more Trump thing. Somebody had a headline that pointed out that none of his family was in the courtroom, and they said, even Jeffrey Dahmer's family showed up for his trials.
That's my boy. Wow, yeah. Hey, I do have a piece of Trump news that I wanted to share, actually. Not about the seamy trial that's going on, which I prefer not to think about. But about this whole thing with the National Archives, you know, one of the many things that are kind of hovering in the background that they've, through a combination of a corrupt judicial system and the inveterate, scrambling to delay that the Trump's lawyers engage in, is this thing about his keeping documents. And it turns out that as late as November of 2021, officials at the National Archives were trying to persuade the former president of the United States to return this big giant pile of records that he'd taken from the White House. And one of Trump's advisors apparently told him, you better give it back. And this is according to newly unsealed documents. According to this FBI interview, this person said to the Trump, whatever you have, give everything back. Let them come here and get everything. This was an unnamed associate. I said, don't give them a reason to indict you because they will. Supreme Court, take note. Less than 2 years later, that turned out to be the case because 2 years later, of course, federal prosecutors charged Mr. Trump with violating the Espionage Act, accusing him of illegally holding onto more than 30 highly classified documents. And then, much worse, trying to stop people from retrieving them. So this was way back. I mean, we're talking in the first year after he left office, they were already warning him. Even his friends were warning him. This is not a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I get, rather than hypothetical cases about what might happen, here's what actually happened. Is that guy liable or not? Tell us, Supreme Court. What's your best thinking on that one?
What is there's one of these kind of a treatise on how fascism takes over, and, yeah. and it's got like a bullet points of various stages, and,
sure.
and one of the bullet points is your institutions will not save you.
Yeah, no, they won't.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, because what you do is the two things. Yeah, you staff all the institutions with your cronies, and then in the background, the constant drumbeat of violence. I mean, that's what all this NRA stuff has been about for at least the last 30 years, if not longer, which is all of us who are crazy, we all got guns.
Mm-hmm.
So just remember that. That's going on in the background. Well, that's not very pleasant. No. Sorry.
Hey, have you ever heard the David Bowie song, Spiders from Mars?
Of course.
He had like a whole album about, you know,
yeah.
Ziggy Stardust and
yeah.
the spiders from Mars.
Oh, you bet.
So they found spiders on Mars.
No.
Well, kind of. It's a phenomenon that could be mistaken for spiders scuttling across the planet's surface.
Oh, I think that's what's happening.
The European Space Agency has spotted it. They're images of, you know, quote, spiders, which are really just small, dark-colored features that begin to be formed when the sunshine falls on carbon dioxide.
Right.
It's probably frozen during the, yep. the planet's winter months.
Yeah.
The light causes the carbon dioxide ice at the bottom of the deposits to turn into gas, which eventually bursts through the ice, and then they can be up to the it shoots dust out of yeah. like tiny little geysers.
And then it scuttles off.
Before settling on the surface. And yeah, the video, it looks like spiders kind of crawling out of
cool.
rock. So Bowie was onto something there.
There's a movie, what was it called? Oh, Apollo 18. And it's like a low budget but very cleverly done. It's a little bit like the Blair Witch thing where it's all supposedly found video,
uh-huh.
right? And it's two astronauts that go to the moon, and it's on a secret mission that's sponsored not by NASA but by DOD and by Department of Defense. And they go there, and supposedly there's something going on the moon. The Russians are doing something or something. And they go there, and it's because they've discovered that there's life on the moon. It's a very strange, low form of life, but it's important to humans. The plot a little bit like Alien. Like, they know that there's life there, and so they want to kind of get a corner on it for anybody else does. And it's kind of interesting because it's very claustrophobic. They're living in the lunar module.
Mm-hmm.
It's just these two guys, and they're kind of squeezed together in the lunar module. And then they go out prospecting and looking, and one of the little critters, it kind of like gets into this one guy's suit, and it gets under his skin, and it infects him, and he gets a terrible, terrible results. But it's a really Apollo 18. I'm almost positive that's the name of it, and you can look it up. And it's actually I thought well done. They have it's a piece together from like transmissions back to Houston,
mm-hmm.
and then a camera that one of the guys has on board to just like kind of film just what's going on
yeah.
and stuff like that. And then they find another a cosmonaut who's over in the next crater who landed earlier, and apparently that's what started the whole thing, because they see the cosmonaut is all kind of like screwed up, you know, like something bad has happened to his
yeah.
body or whatever. You can guess what happens next, but
oh wow,
it's very fascinating. So the reason why I say that is because it reminds me of the spider thing. There's little scuttly things. Little scuttly things. That's, you gotta watch for those guys.
I like the one about the Nazis on the dark side of the moon that are like riding dinosaurs. And,
oh, them, yeah.
I forget.
Was that the Creation Science Museum?
The Ark Encounters.
Yeah, right? The Ark Encounters, pardon me. Yes, so. Right. Yeah.
I was watching the Brewer game the other night, and they were playing in Cincinnati.
Sure.
And one of the ads at the stadium, one of the billboards behind home plate, was for the Ark Encounter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in Florence, Kentucky, which is across the river.
Yeah.
So it's a short drive from Cincinnati. Yeah. Yeah.
They have dinosaurs, don't they?
Yeah. Well, Florence, I love Florence because you can find this online, by the way. They used to have a mall there, a giant mall, you know, comparable to like what you have in Minneapolis or something.
Yeah.
And over time, as you know, malls have kind of fallen into disrepute and disrepair.
Sure.
And so they had a water tower that said Florence Mall in giant letters. And so they got up there with some whitewash and turned it into Florence Y'all. I thought it was pretty clever,
that's
actually.
Good. I like that.
Good old Florence, y'all.
Oh, this is not related to anything. I had something reminded me of this when we were talking. But so there's a new show on Hulu, Shogun.
Okay.
They remade that book.
Yeah.
And I was watching an episode last night. I don't know. I've watched a couple of them. I don't. Whatever, but that's not the point. But I was watching, the credits were rolling, and I happened to notice in the credits they had somebody credited as the kimono technician.
You got to get your OB just right. I'm sorry, I just, you know, badly tied OB, it's all over.
Kimono technician.
Technician is the best part. Yes.
So I'll talk to Melvina and see if she wants to give you a career change. I think she'd be good at that. Yeah. So.
It's a high-end kind of job. I think. Very competitive, I've heard.
Also, I noticed when I was watching it, I thought, well, this looks like it's Japan, obviously.
Yeah.
And some of it is shot in Japan, but in some of these episodes, like they were like having battles and they were chasing each other through the woods. And it's like, this looks like Vancouver because, you know,
everything's in Vancouver.
Everything's shot in Vancouver, everybody knows what that looks like.
Yeah.
This looks like Vancouver, and at the end on the credits, they thank the Canadian filmmakers.
Good job, you know? Al. Okay, so while we're giving recommendations, that was kind of a recommendation.
Yeah.
I've been watching, I think it's on Netflix.
Just for the kimonos.
I think it was on Netflix. I'm watching Franklin, the series about Benjamin Franklin's diplomatic mission to France to try to get France to support.
Is this where he kills all the vampires?
American Revolution? No. But it's very clever. If you like period stuff, that's really well done. And the ins and outs, the ups and downs, the craziness, the artificiality, the half-said things that aren't really said at all of diplomacy, this is for you. It's all mind games with
you.
His conversations with the French foreign minister are just, they're not supposed to be meeting because the king has said that he doesn't want the foreign minister meeting with Franklin. So when they meet each other, they're basically saying, you know, it would be a pleasure to meet you someday, he says, because, of course, they're not supposed to be meeting at all. Just things like that. Nice little touches. Oh, so
that sounds good.
I like Benjamin Franklin. I mean, he was probably one of the smartest of the founding fathers. And he was devil may care. Right. He wasn't uptight like Adams.
Right.
He wasn't a slaveholder. I mean, he was just, in fact, he co-founded the Anti-Slavery Society with Alexander Hamilton. And he's just like, he'd been in Europe for years, so everybody there trusted him. He was a huge celebrity, which is why the Continental Congress sent him. You know, it's like, this is the guy that brought lightning, you know, electricity to Earth and things like that.
And a panty dropper.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Hey, engineers have partially restored a 1970s-era computer on NASA's Voyager 1 spacecraft.
Yes, wasn't that great?
It went up in 1977.
Yep.
They had 5 months of long-distance troubleshooting, and they've decided that they can resume normal operations.
Right. It insists on being called V'ger now.
V'ger,
though,
so, yeah.
That's the only unfortunate part of it.
No, that was Voyager 6.
Oh, was it? Yeah, I guess
that was
right.
The fictional Voyager 6 got sucked into a black hole.
Yeah, we never did one beyond 2, though, did we?
No, we didn't.
But we'll have to do that just to catch up with the Star Trek universe. Right? Hey, some positive news here, a couple pieces of positive news. Airlines are now required. This is what happens when you have, not to put too fine a point on it, an administration that cares about people. The Biden administration issued final rules on Wednesday. Airlines are now required to offer cash refunds for cancellations and delays. And they also are being required now, but this is for the Transportation Department, required to disclose fees for baggage or canceling a reservation. In other words, these aren't things that just pop up when you didn't least expect it. They have to tell you ahead of time so you can plan accordingly. Transportation Department said airlines would be required to provide automatic cash refunds within a few days for canceled flight and, quote, significant delays, which, of course, will be defined in, future regulations.
But this is
the kind of thing that, of course, is very, very common in other advanced economies, and as in Europe, for example. And finally, it's coming to the one horse town, which is America. So airlines will still be allowed to offer another flight or a travel credit instead. And I've done that. If flight's been canceled, you get down to another flight. You know, they make it a little burdensome, but if you pay attention, you can figure out how to do it. But the rule will also apply to refunds of checked bag fees if the bag isn't delivered within 12 hours. So in a separate rule, the Transportation Department said that airlines and ticket agents have to disclose upfront what they charge for checked and carry-on bags and any other fees that might be involved. So, you know, you can be an informed consumer.
I actually saw some of the on-air, quote, talent on Fox News praising this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it probably affects them. I mean, they probably fly a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's
like, oh, something for me. Good.
I think they're high as kites when I watch them. So seems likely.
Well, there were also some rulings this week on as far as overtime. They bumped. I don't know if you wanted to.
Go ahead.
Just off the top of my head, they bumped up the threshold for overtime.
Yeah, this is for people who are salaried employees,
right,
not
per
hour. Because that's the way, I mean, I was in the restaurant business, as you know, for many years. And the best way to exploit somebody is make them like sink manager or something, you know, and then they don't get paid for overtime.
Yeah,
right. In fact, we used to have the Labor Department come around periodically to make sure that people who were assigned, quote unquote, managerial duties actually were performing managerial duties in the right percentage, because this is a typical kind of dodge.
Right. So. Well, you were you managed all the rats in the restaurant there.
Managed the rats?
Yeah. So, that was your staff.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, then there was also the ruling about the non-disclosure.
Non-disclosure.
Agreement. That was another big one.
Yep.
I mean, so.
That was the FTC did that. Yeah. Yep. Federal Trade Commission and the FCC. Voted this week, just yesterday, to restore net neutrality, net neutrality, and to expand government oversight on broadband providers and try to get people access to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is stuff that is really important to the average person, even to the people on Fox, apparently.
Like I say, it affected them personally.
And do you think that a Trump administration would be doing that? No,
yeah,
they'd unleash the vampiric vampiric market.
The hounds of commerce. And also there was a vote in the automakers in Tennessee.
Tennessee, that's right, the VW.
Which is a big deal because a lot of times that's why they moved a lot of their production down south, is the right-to-work states and things like that.
Yeah, they had slavery there, and they've been trying to keep as close to that as they can ever since.
It's tradition.
It's tradition.
It's our heritage. So.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we have to take a brief break, play some announcements, and then come back with
more good news. Let's have some good news.
Let's make this a positive show.
That was some good news there.
Yeah, that was like a
people trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. So you got any good news you wanna?
I'm looking through to see what I can find.
It's a little hard.
Yeah.
Nowadays,
I got a strain of a few things out here. Wait, no, not that.
A squint.
No.
All
not
right.
That.
We'll keep looking during the break. But anyway. you are listening to WRT 89.9 FM. You might be listening on the internet at WRTFM.org because we stream constantly. We should get that looked at. But or you might be listening in the future because we put this show and all of our shows up on the archives page. And our pal Mindless Minion D-Cubed does the file management to get this available for our podcast for Spotify and Apple or wherever. So, all right, we'll be back in a couple minutes. Hang on, listen to these announcements and
do what they say.
Do what they say. follow these orders.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
It's Volunteer Appreciation Week, and organizations around the country are celebrating their volunteers, including WORT. The staff collective wanted to pop on the air to express our sincere thanks to all our WORT volunteers, past and present.
Every day, WORT volunteers go above and beyond.
Whether running the soundboards,
interviewing state representatives,
organizing the record library,
curating music playlists,
answering phones,
or making coffee.
For every hour you hear on the air, whether a music program, news show, or talk show, the hosts, reporters, and producers have worked countless hours off-air to make that show as informative and entertaining as possible. They spend hours searching for music, reading books to review, researching local elections, and finding the events and guests you didn't know you were missing.
If you've ever visited the WORT booth or attended a WORT event, contacted the station for any reason, purchased raffle tickets to support our cause, or even just checked our website calendars for updates, you've directly experienced the positive impact of our dedicated and friendly volunteers.
Thanks to the unwavering efforts and selfless generosity of our volunteers, WORT has been a constant voice on the airwaves for an impressive 48 plus years. Their time, talents, and contributions are a true reflection of our vibrant community.
Thank you, WORT volunteers, for everything you have done and continue to do.
Happy Volunteer Appreciation Week!
And we're back. So Epic is going to build a new campus.
Oh, good Lord.
They've got all these kind of goofy, fantastical things. They've got Harry Potter, and they've got, they can't call it Willy Wonka, but it's kind of a Willy Wonka thing.
It's Billy Bonka.
Which is Billy Bonka.
Which is totally different.
Which is appropriate because they treat their employees like Oompa Loompas.
I'll have to talk to my friend who works for Epic and find out if that's true. He does look a little oranger than I remember, but
well, they're going to build a new one. It's another fantasy theme.
Yeah,
it's
your money
be,
at work.
It's going to be Fitchburg World. It's going to be the magical imaginary realm of Fitchburg.
Developer heaven.
No, it's going to be called Other Worlds. It'll draw inspiration. Okay. So don't sue us from the Lord of the Rings and Narnia.
Oh,
with
wow.
a floating forest and plenty of references to elves.
Hmm. So. Happy little elves.
Or else,
yes. Hey, sir, just a couple more little background again. Conditions of our lives that have just gotten better this week. On Tuesday morning, Judge Stephen Bau is the United States District Judge. Signed off on an agreement between the National Association of Realtors and home sellers who sued the real estate trade group over its rules on commissions to agents. This agreement is still subject to a hearing for final approval, but it looks like it's going to go. Basically, they said that realtors are taking too much in commissions, and it's slowing up the ability for people to sell homes and what they can realize in terms of when they sell it. And so the realtors, another element of our society, which is basically based on the concept of parasitism, is going to basically take a little less blood than they were in the past, thanks to this ruling. The group it's the NAR, and this is the National Association of Realtors, of course. It has, of course, it's based in Chicago, so you know they got to be tough. They got 1.5 million members, and they have a huge influence over the real estate industry, and have for over a century now. Basically, they're getting pushback, thinking that the real estate agents have to take a little bit less. The standard commission right now it hovers at around 6%, and agents will be essentially blocked from making those commission offers. A shift that, well, some say, lower commissions across the board and eventually force down home prices as a result. And all you have to do is look in the street and see that we need home prices to be lower. So yeah. We just got companion and I mean, we live in this hovel. I mean, you know, and we just found out what our evaluation is. Mm-hmm. We live on the isthmus. And because, again, you're in a system where other people's decisions, other people's choices, other people's needs dictate value, our place is outrageously priced. I'm like, I didn't do anything to do that. I mean, when we moved out there, we were urban pioneers. I mean, there wasn't even a nearby grocery store, let alone all the stuff that's there now. We were just kind of like, you know, bohemian freaks that wanted to live on the isthmus. And now we're thousandaires. And not intentionally. We did nothing, and we did not want this to happen, but there it is. So let's anything we can do to push that back on that would be great.
All right, good. I thought of another positive story.
That what's that?
The government is pushing to limit the fees that like banks can charge you for things like overdrafts and stuff like that.
Oh, very nice.
They want to limit it to $15 because a lot of times it's like $45 or something. And of course, there's some dispute. One party is in favor of it and one is not.
Yeah,
and
I wonder who's who.
I won't go into the details. But
the problem is all this stuff is the famous economics concept of inelastic demand. I mean, you're banking, and as long as all the banks, they don't have to consciously collude. They all just have to say, well, that's the in. When they say it's an industry standard to do that, that's what we call sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge collusion, basically, because you don't have any plan B.
Right,
I mean,
right.
My plan B is to be at a credit union, right? But I mean, not a lot of people across the country have that option.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at that, and you're like, well, what do I say to fight back? Because they're all doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ruby just popped in here gave me a story. Yeah, I wish she'd stay, but she's probably ready to go.
Yeah.
But it's a story out of the State Journal. It says, a rare whooping crane rescued from Chicago suburb with a costume and some grapes.
Yipes.
So there was this young whooping crane. It took an unlikely route home this week thanks to a conspiracy that involved a costumed researcher, green grapes, and alert bird watchers. Concerned about the crane's safety amid the heavy traffic of suburban Chicago. So this crane had spent its winter in West Central Indiana, but at some point during...
During
the the bird showed good sense trying to get out of Indiana.
Yeah, there we go. Laud the bird.
Because it was flying north. It was migrating north.
Yep. To Wisconsin.
And to come back to Wisconsin. But but it got separated from its group. And it was in this Chicago area suburb. And online bird forums lit up Tuesday. Which drew the attention of the International Crane Foundation.
All right.
So armed with a baggie of green grapes, that's a favorite snack of cranes, and a whooping crane costume with a whooping crane puppet head, Hillary Thompson, who's helped rear whooping cranes for over a decade, made the drive to Wilmette with ICF North American fellow Alyssa Ward. Thompson put on the costume, slowly approached the bird, and began using the beak of the puppet head to toss grapes toward the crane.
You don't know how many times I've done that.
Well, you were a puppeteer at one
point. I was. So. I was a puppeteer. Yeah. You're absolutely right. One of my many bizarre occupations.
They worked to keep the crowds away, and especially people walking their dogs. And it says lawn maintenance was momentarily halted with the help of Illinois wildlife officials. It was a big production. Mm. So they got the crane to trust them. They put a hood over its head to keep it calm.
That's how I stay calm.
So I'm going to put a hood over my head.
I'm sure you can find that on the internet.
Yeah, that's true. But a vet examined the bird, and it was fine, and they eventually brought it up to Horicon Marsh, where it was released. So there are more happy news. Thank you, Ruby, for bringing that in.
You can't really get much happy news out of the Middle East right now, but there were two little stories that struck me as being something moving in the right direction. So Major General Aharon Haliva, who was the head of intelligence for Israel's military, resigned this week. And of course, General Haliva had been in charge just up in the period preceding the Hamas attacks on October 7th, which shows that he wasn't really doing his job very well, because that's something you'd think they would have known more about. Of course, he was working for the Netanyahu government, which as far as we can tell from internal documents, they were trying to play off the various Palestinian actors against one another. So it's hard to know how much to blame this guy. But at any rate, he did leave his post, and the Army Chief of Staff accepted his resignation. So that's a positive, I guess. Another tiny, and these are minuscule, believe me, minuscule moves in the right direction. But the top coordinator for humanitarian aid from the UN in Gaza, a woman by the name of Sigrid Kaag, said in a briefing to the Security Council just this week that Israel has improved in the flow of aid to Gaza. But she also emphasized that more must be done. Further definitive and urgent steps are needed to set the course for a sustained flow of humanitarian and commercial goods into Gaza. But she did acknowledge that there was some positive movement in this. And again, it's a tiny shred of positiveness, but there it is at any rate.
Minneapolis is on track to have the highest government-mandated minimum price for cigarettes in the nation. The city council Thursday unanimously approved a $15 per pack floor. The average price of cigarettes is about $8 a pack around the country. So,
Everyone delicious. It's springtime. I love that back when they, because we're old enough to remember cigarette ads on TV.
Sure.
And they always emphasize all these extrinsic factors. Like, yeah. It's refreshing. Yeah. It's springtime. Yeah. It's, you know, it'll make you manly. I mean, everything except for there's a burning stick of weed in your mouth. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, that's a little strange, isn't it?
Well, the springtime one was the greatest. It's one of my favorite ads of all time because it's just flips it completely around.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, here, you're going to suck on this thing with smoke and carcinogens and hold it in your lungs. And it's like breathing fresh air in the spring. It's like they're just flat out 100% lying.
They're gaslighting you is what they're doing. It's like, you think that's smoky and horrible? No, it's springtime. What's wrong with you? The ad said it. Hey, I want to mention that this week is the Crazy Legs. It looks like it's going to be pretty nice tomorrow. The Crazy Legs race will be tomorrow in Madison, and that does mean that some areas will be closed off. You know, consult various online sources to find the details. But the Crazy Legs, it's a 5-mile race that benefits UW-Madison Athletics because God knows they need extra money. The race begins on Library Mall at State and North Lake, and streets will be affected in case you do live in Madison Land, the state capital, which is also an amusement park. Major streets affected will include West Gilman, Langdon, and West Dayton, and Old University. And the race is going to end outside the Kohl Center, or as I learned to call it, the Herb Garden. The event is scheduled to conclude at noon, and the streets will only reopen as the final runners ooze their way through each section of the course. Madison Metro Route C and 80 will be detoured in case you need to get on C or 80. They're going to be detoured. So, but check that all out. That's going to be tomorrow, and that's an annual event, and it looks like it's going to be pretty nice tomorrow.
Okay. So I ran in a fun run at one point. I mean, I did quite a few of them when I was actually running and in fairly good shape. But this one I wasn't in very good shape, I worked at the YMCA we were putting it on, so I thought I'd.
Did kids throw tin cans at you or anything?
Well, I was really, really out of shape, and I was like one of the last people to finish, and I got the sympathy clap from people. It made me so mad.
Yeah, I know. Stop it.
I know. I'm fat and slow. Yeah. I don't want your sympathy claps.
But see, there's a wonderful movie with Simon Pegg called Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Yeah.
And it's British. So in that movie, the guy who's the athletic character, who's an American, of course, and so we all hate him. Boo, hiss, you know. He's running in this, and he's trying to take away the character that Simon Pegg plays, his ex-girlfriend. And Simon Pegg thinks, all right, you know, this jock who thinks he's everything, I'm going to run this race. And, of course, he's totally out of shape because he spends all his time down at the pub, you know, lifting a pint and smoking and laying around.
That's the best way to train.
Exactly. Well, and that's what ends up happening. The home pride of the British people is in their amateurism, right? I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, they were one of the last countries to really try to like professionalize their Olympic teams and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, some dude just comes from Leeds or wherever. And, you know, it's like, okay, great. And so that's the thing. He's like the last guy, but he has injured himself in the run. And so he becomes the hero, even though he's the last one, because, of course, he has that, you know, indomitable spirit that you know, led them to conquer people all over the globe or whatever, you know. It's like, yeah, we know we're crap, but, you know, at least we hang on and, you know, whatever. I don't know what it's like to be British. I don't know. I think they think that's what they're like, but anyway.
Over 100,000 Icelandic women protested this week for gender equality. And that's a pretty impressive number considering there's 360,000 people that live in Iceland.
Yeah, it's, yes.
They didn't go to work. They didn't go to school. They protested for the same rights as men. 100,000 out of, so like a third of their whole population showed up for that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A companion and I were there 1 year. But just by accident, it was Gay Pride. And I would estimate that the entire population of Iceland was at Gay Pride. It was just, everyone was there. It's like, it doesn't take a lot, you know, to have the entire population in the place, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's as big as Dane County.
Yeah, it is. Imagine Dane County is a country. Yeah. Exactly. So here's another positive story. School meals will soon contain less salt and sugar.
Oh, I saw that.
This is according to the Department of Agriculture. They announced on Wednesday that they'd finalized regulations that they first proposed way back in 2023. And they basically are trying to ensure that students have quality meals and, you know, and healthy meals, things that will be good for them. And this is an announcement from Tom Vilsack, who you may wonder who that is. He's the Agriculture Secretary.
Sure.
About 28.6 million students received or purchased school lunches in the 2023 fiscal year. And so this is very important that the Department of Agriculture get into the business of making sure that these meals are good and good for you.
Hmm. Aren't those kids going to get, like, addicted to that food if they get it every day, though?
No, that's the problem. See, that's why they put all the sugar and salt in it. They're trying to addict them to various things. And this is just going to be stuff you eat because you need to stay alive.
Oh, okay.
it's a strange concept, I know. But it's not food as entertainment, so.
Here's a food-related story. Archaeologists have discovered two intact bottles of cherries during a dig at George Washington's Mount Vernon.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed to date back to the 1700s.
Mention it by name.
So he chopped down the cherry tree, and then he took the cherries and...
I did not.
Put them in a jar.
Did not chop it down, you liar.
Prove it. I had immunity.
Check with my lawyer on that. Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Hey, by the way, speaking of food and stuff, there was a new study talking about fasting and whether fasting could actually affect longevity. And fasting is like, you know, taking periods of time where you just don't have any food intake, which probably is what happened with humans during most of their history, right? They're going around and, you know, they can't find any mastodons or whatever, and so they just don't have anything. And they've been experimenting on this for about 90 years. I was surprised by this. They started these experiments back in the 1930s to see whether restricted calorie intake could possibly be healthy. And they don't know exactly why, but this eating less does seem in many experimental animals to have an animal or person live longer. A lot of people, again, theorize that maybe it has to do with how we evolved as creatures because, of course, long periods of having nothing to eat is not uncommon, right? When you're living out there in the wild and trying to live by hook or by crook and don't have giant machines that are, you know, chopping up animals into little bits and then eating them like candy.
I mean, drones drop them in your living room.
Yeah, exactly. One theory is that on the cellular level, calorie restriction makes animals more resilient to physical stressors. For example, they've done this with mice. Calorie-restricted mice have a greater resistance to toxins, and they recover faster from injuries.
Hmm.
Another explanation involves the fact that both humans and animals, eating fewer calories slows down your metabolism. And that means that you're not having to draw as much resources in order, of course, for your body to operate. Calorie restriction also forces the body to rely on fuel sources other than glucose. So it's using other reserves. It doesn't have just a big buildup there. And that could be related, they think, possibly, to various age-related illnesses.
Hmm.
So it's a fascinating concept, which I will totally not try.
Yeah. I do. I fast
four, do you?
Four or five times a day.
Are you serious with me?
Hours at a time.
Hours at a time, yeah. Well, I am bad for eating between meals. There's no doubt about it. And the things that I love to chomp, I mean, I eat things that are not bad for me, but I probably eat too many of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, you can only eat so much yogurt without that having an effect on you, for example.
You're fine.
Yeah. You think?
Hospitalized women are less likely to die or be readmitted to the hospital if they're treated by female doctors.
Oh, there's a shocker.
According to a study published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. In the study of people ages 65 and older, 8% of women treated by female physicians died within 30 days, compared with about 8.5% of women treated by male physicians.
Wow.
Although the difference between the two groups seems small, the researchers say erasing the gap could save 5,000 women's lives each year. They included nearly 800,000 male and female patients between 2016 and 2019. So it was a pretty big sample
size. That's intense.
Yeah. So. Research shows that women are less likely than men to receive intensive care, but more likely to report having negative experiences with health care, having their concerns dismissed, and having their heart or pain symptoms ignored.
Yeah.
Male physicians are also more likely to underestimate women's risk of stroke.
Yep. Suck it up, Buttercup.
You're being hysterical.
Yeah, I know. I actually, a few years ago, I had a student who was a nursing student, and she was a minor in my area, and it was about believability or credibility. You know, there's a thing called epistemic injustice, where you don't attribute to certain classes of people the ability to make to add to the body of knowledge because you suspect them of being biased in some way or something. And what they found was, and this just parallels what you were talking about, is that in many cases, white physicians will downplay, for example, if their patient is black, they'll think they're being not hysteric, but I mean exaggerating, mm-hmm. you know, being histrionic. Yeah. With respect to their pain manifestations, and so they kind of downplay, they put like a little negative, you know, like less than that, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is in
yeah.
their minds.
Yeah.
And she did some pretty substantial research, and she presented it to her professors in the nursing department, and they both loved it and were kind of dismayed by it. Yeah. Like, oh dear, one more thing to fault us for here.
Oh my goodness. So. Here's some more good news. The new Madison softball team has a name now. They announced the name and a logo. It's called they're the Madison Nightmares.
Oh yeah, I heard about this.
And they're kind of like they're gonna be playing in the Northwoods League this year, and it should be fun. We'll have to get out there and play. They'll play at Warner Park. And
we should do a Mellon Floyd Day.
We really should. Yeah. So Ruby's very excited about this. So
is she?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Oh yeah. She okay. said she's kind of obsessed with this right now. So.
So excited doesn't quite do it justice. She's
no.
obsessed.
Well, okay. Or low key obsessed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she does everything kind of, you know,
like that
with just the right level.
But yeah. So they had the announcement of the new name and the logo and everything this week. So that's so that'll be fun. We'll have to get out there. I like the idea of a Mellon Floyd show or
yeah.
a Mellon Floyd game.
Yeah.
So
no, not a game show. We tried that. That was
no.
A mess.
We're not doing any more game
yeah,
shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, but. I was telling you again. No. Hey, there was a point in time, they think now, where a man's best friend also included foxes.
Really?
That's right. They've been doing some digging around during the Pleistocene era, and they found that that hunter-gatherers during that period may have domesticated other kinds of animals besides just wolves, foxes being one of them. A team of researchers recently discovered fox bones unearthed among the remains of dozens of hunter-gatherers. This was published in the Royal Society Open Science Journal. It posits that the fox lived alongside the humans, just like you know the animals that became sort of proto dogs.
Yeah.
You know the ones that were more sociable and were willing to get a free ride. You know they hung around with the humans, and apparently this was true with foxes, some foxes as well. It appears to have been intentionally buried along with other humans in a cemetery.
Oh wow.
This is according to Ophelia Labrosseur. She's a zooarchaeologist at the University of Oxford. It's a practice that's been suggested before, but to actually find this is a nice surprise, she says.
Cool. So. All right, we're almost out of time. Time to declare the weekend. That was a nice one there.
Yeah, very, thank you. I'm getting better.
Very well done.
Set my sights low, you know. Set
getting better at the kazoo.
Yeah, yeah. Set your sight at failure. You're bound to succeed.
All right, Pants, it was great to see you.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. The kiosk is up next. After that, Who Cooks For You with the Real Jaguar. Then Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday On My Mind, all kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT. And you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk at you next Friday. Bye-bye. Super bad.
Come on now. This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 26th.
Years ago, Coca-Cola excitedly debuted a new formula for its soda, dubbing it New Coke. Consumers hated it, and sales plummeted, a marketing fiasco. But here comes Coke again, pushing an even worse product, quote, a better plastic bottle, trumpeting it as 100% recycled. Coke really needs an environmental PR goose-up because today's consumers know and care a lot about the massive plastic contamination of our planet. And Coke has been ranked as the globe's number one plastic polluter for 6 years in a row. Problem is, the corporation's recycling hype is a fraud, for plastic is a fossil fuel polymer that essentially is forever. Even though most of us dutifully put throwaway containers in recycling bins, the industry's dirty secret is that 95% of plastics cannot be recycled. So they're simply burned, dumped in landfills, or tossed, quote, away. In a February report, the Center for Climate Integrity reveals that the plastics industrial complex has been like big tobacco and big oil, intentionally fabricating, promoting, and profiting from a mass market scam for decades. As the Climate Center commented, the only thing the plastics industry has actually recycled is their lies over and over again. But taking another lesson from tobacco and oil, big plastic figures that if one lie stops working, tell a bigger one. So Coca-Cola is presently gushing about better plastic bottles, while plastic manufacturers frantically insist recycling is real. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, their new claims are nothing but refabricated prevarications. Meanwhile, the industry is planning to dump 300% more plastic on us in the next few years. Hello, let's get real. The only way to stop planet-choking plastic